Hi, we're so happy you're here, and we are so excited to tell you about an awesome wedding planning resource that we have created just for you.
In March of 2021, we launched the Big Wedding Planning Masterclass, a digital course designed with you in mind. Any budget, any type of wedding, at any phase of wedding planning.
We spent a year creating this interactive course. It includes unlimited access, all of our templates, spreadsheets, timelines, checklists, and pro tips. Everything is downloadable and customizable, and we walk you through it step by step with video tutorials and screen shares.
We threw it all into this course. There's no way you won't get something out of it. We're so sure, we've included a 30-day money-back guarantee.
We're so excited to share this course with you and to help you plan your wedding our way.
So go to www.thebigweddingplanningmasterclass.com for more information and to sign up and to purchase. The Big Wedding Planning Podcast.
Just two wedding planners tearing it up. Listen, learn.
Hello and welcome to the Big Wedding Planning Podcast, a show for anyone involved in planning a wedding. We want you to learn something valuable and be entertained at the same time. My name is Michelle Martinez.
And I'm Christy Matthews.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Christy Matthews.
Where are we today? I'm here in Texas and you are in Oakland?
Oaktown, yeah. 510. I'm in Oakland. I am in a dining room of my friend's house with about three very nice decorative pillows propped up in front of my microphone and a table runner, trying to make this room less echoey.
To make this room a podcast home.
Yes, that's right.
You sound normal to me, but I guess you'll hear it when you play it back.
Yeah. Have microphone will travel.
There you go.
Really quickly, I want to give a shout out to whoever this bride is that gave us another awesome rating and review on iTunes. Blooms 86. Thank you for the 5-star rating, and her title is Best Wedding Podcast. She's getting married in May of 2017. Thank you so much for taking the time to rate and review us. It is the ultimate, like, compliment, and we love our listeners, and we really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
So, Christy, what are we talking about today?
Very good. Very good. Okay. So this is our welcome back to part two of a three-part little mini series we're doing on the podcast all about the timeline.
Da, 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 da.
The timeline. Ba, the ba, wedding ba, day ba. Schedule. The day of Bible. The thing that Michelle and I lay awake at night before weddings, just going over in our heads, thinking about every second and detail and ways to tweak things or move things around, and it's down to the minute, and it just really lights our fire.
Yeah, baby.
A good timeline will inform all of your vendor team and mm-hmm. your wedding party and your parents and anybody that asks you a random ass question, like the week of your wedding, when your cousin just cannot figure out when the shuttle arrives at the hotel, even though you put it in the information packet that you sent her and it's on your website.
Yeah.
You will be able to quickly refer.
Your beautifully illustrated email.
Yeah, your map.
The packet of information.
The text message you sent to the whole family. Yeah. She still has questions and you have answers because you have this really beautiful, detailed timeline. And episode, the first one we did for timeline, we talked about sort of putting all the basics down on paper. Mm-hmm. We talked about how much spreadsheets are just awesome and how to sort of craft your spreadsheet to begin with knowing that you're going to throw some things down and then kind of fill it out as you go. So we mentioned like framework last time between
puzzle.
Yeah, putting the puzzle together. You start with the four corners and the frame, and that's where we ended. And now episode two is sort of more the fun stuff of the wedding. We are going to call them micro events in this episode. I think that's just an easy way to refer to the things that happen in a timeline that flesh out your day. So, for example, like the first dance is a, is a micro event that happens at most weddings. So we're just going to go down the list of micro events that we see in a typical wedding day schedule or timeline, and then kind of talk about what we've seen within that micro event category. Is that
right?
So
definitely, yeah, definitely. If you have not listened to part one of this timeline three-part series, you should go back and listen to that because we laid it out, you know, just kind of like really basing it around those three main events: ceremony, cocktail, reception, and dinner, right? So yes, micro events. So for me and my wedding day schedule template that I work off of, I have like those micro events kind of in bold and all caps, because that mostly happens at almost every wedding, these items. And if they don't, I delete them. But kind of the first after ceremony, cocktail, and dinner, those are also bolded, is usually the toasts. Right.
So you're looking for who is going to give a toast, who you want to give a toast, and when you want those toasts to happen, which we did a whole episode just on toasts, about what is typical, which is just real quick, a welcome toast and toast by two members of the wedding party, usually the maid of honor and the best man during dinner or right after dinner. And then maybe a thank you toast by the bride and groom before they cut the cake. I think that's what we're seeing most typically. But again, you know, it's been all over the map. I've seen toasts, you know, before dinner, well into the dancing part of the night. So there's pros and cons of how you time this stuff out. But toasts is one of the big micro events that you'll need to add to your timeline. So if you don't know exactly where you want it to go, just put it in the timeline anyways and leave the time period beginning and ending blank. And maybe put who you know is going to give a toast, their names, and then you can plug it into the timeline later. And that's the same with all of these. We, as event planners, there's sort of a rule in weddings, in all events. Even when you throw a good dinner party at your home, something needs to happen about every 30 minutes. It doesn't need to be a big thing that happens, but maybe an announcement or a shift in the flow of the event, or if everyone is standing, then everyone's sitting. These are things that just happen because we find that guests at parties need to be told what they're doing, and they need to know kind of what's happening next, or people get full on restless or bored.
They get antsy, like, what's going on? Like,
well, I thought we were supposed to hear what, I mean, I thought she was singing and now we're all just up here. And
well, what's going to happen is the older folks are always asking, when is the cake? Because that's their cue to leave.
Right.
The younger folks want to know when the bar is going to be open again after dinner, or when,
and when it's going to close,
and when it's going to close
so they can get all their drinks in.
So
these are things that you can make announcements, or your MC or DJ can make announcements to help guide the party, but you will have had your basic schedule worked out already. So he is just facilitating, but the DJ might be just facilitating the way it goes.
Right. And going back to toasts, so what I always do is, as far as timing for toasts, I always allot 5 minutes. And in those 5 minutes should be, you know, the announcement of who's making the toast. If you want that, you might not want it that structured. Some people don't like their guests announced by whomever is emceeing. Mm-hmm.
They just want them to pop up and say,
right,
I'm Bob, I'm Jim's brother. And
right. So yeah. Like the start time of a toast might be, you know, 6:05 and the end time might be 6:10. And the what column is going to say toast by or welcome by father of the bride. Mm-hmm. And the who is going to be the name of that person giving the toast, first and last name. The name of the person who is emceeing it, if you want your DJ to announce the toast. Also, the photographer should be in that who column. And if you have a videographer, the videographer should also be in that who column so that they know that they need to be present for this toast. So the 5 minutes should cover the announcement, or if I'm the person giving the toast, I would say, hi, everybody, can I have your attention, please? You know, ding, 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 tapping the class. Hey, how's it going? You know, it takes a while for people to shut up, for lack of a better term. Hi there. My name is Michelle Martinez. I am Christy's friend. We've known each other for 9 years. Thank you all for, yay, people are clapping. So Christy and I have known, you know, so this whole process from the time people are quiet and listening to the time they finish the toast, that's probably about 5 minutes.
And I definitely also put 5 minutes in my timeline, and I do tell them at the rehearsal, because most of the people that give toasts are there as well, that it's a toast, not a roast, and it, you know, let's keep it at about 5 minutes, and that's just to keep things moving along. And I find that that actually ends up being a good average, because there's definitely one or even two toasts in a night that go past that into the like 7, 8, 9 minute realm. Mm-hmm. And usually those are really great toasts. Like, it's the confident person, it's the confident storyteller that can pull off a 9 minute toast. But it only, you know, averages out with the person who literally stands up and says, isn't Amanda beautiful, to the beautiful bride? And then everybody yeah. just raises their glasses and it's less than a minute. So I think 5 minutes is a safe bet. And as you know, if you've listened to this podcast, I love, love, love toasts. They're my favorite part of the wedding. So I am of the mind that if it goes on longer than 5 minutes, like, just chill. Everything's going to be fine. Just enjoy it. You know, and if it gets into the like 12 minute and he's drunkenly rambling realm, then you need to have somebody yank that microphone away. But generally, 5 minutes is a good bet. And if it goes over, that's fine. We work that little buffer time into the timeline as well.
Yeah. So again, I would count on 5 minutes per toast. And remembering that this is going to be during dinner. If you have, you know, sometimes we'll have as many as like 6 or 7 people speaking. And so you want to break that up. I would not do those all in a row. I would do, you know, perhaps you're efficient, or a parent who is helping financially with the wedding, have them be the ones, once everyone is seated for dinner, to start and welcome everyone. And then, you know, perhaps depending on if you've got a buffet or if you've got a 3 or 4 course dinner, perhaps then service starts, you know, maybe first course comes if it's a course dinner. And then after all tables have been served, then maybe you go with the next toast, mm-hmm. which might be, you know, the maid of honor or the best man. You can look in an Emily Post book and see what proper etiquette is as far as who goes first. But if you're not into that sort of thing, just go with your gut. Like, who would you naturally want to, you know, be the first to speak on your behalf? Also, depending on your timeline, we talked a little bit about this before, Christy. If it's a buffet and the buffet is in the same room as the person toasting, allow people to talk as guests are getting up to get their food. It's okay. Like, it's fine, especially if you're really limited on time. Like, if you only have 75 minutes for dinner, you're going to have these toasts happening, you know, as guests are going to the buffet line or as servers are serving. It's ideal not to have any service happening during the time that someone is making a toast, but sometimes you don't have that option. So it's all dependent on your wedding.
Yeah, and if you are confused about when people should speak, ask your catering manager. If you're not working with a wedding planner, ask your catering manager, like, you know, typically, does everybody have food and are they at their tables and is it sort of a quiet-ish time to do it 15 minutes in? Or what do you guys suggest? What do you usually see? And they'll have helpful hints about when the least amount of staff members will be like running around turning tables or yes. shifting from one course to the next for as a distraction. So if you're looking at your timeline and like we said, this is kind of the fun stuff that we're plugging in, toasts is definitely something you're going to need to either space out and definitely time out per toast. And then we also have cake cutting, which we just mentioned. And then we'll go into the dances. There's a bunch of different sorts of dances or things that will happen on the dance floor. So let's circle back to cake cutting, because often now in timelines, I'm seeing that happen right after dinner, mm-hmm. like immediately after dinner, because they don't kind of want to deal with it later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one way of doing it. Yeah.
And that's for a couple reasons. One is that it does take a little bit of time to, after you cut the cake, to slice and serve it. Mm-hmm. Like a half an hour, I would say, when the catering takes the cake away to slice it and plate it and then get it back up to the tables or out to the table that it's going to be on. And then also what Michelle mentioned is that a lot of people, but like it's certainly generational, leave after cake cutting. So it's almost like the real party can begin.
Yeah.
And, you know, the shoes come off and the dance floor gets packed. And then another reason is because once cake is out of the way, the rest of the night is dance floor oriented between yeah. the special dances and then also like garter and bouquet. If you're doing that, it kind of shifts to like the later part of the wedding. And the cake cutting is what symbolizes that shift in a wedding day timeline. It used to be that they happened like 2 hours after dinner and we'd have to sort of stop what we were doing, direct attention to the cake, and then deal with it, and then go back to dancing. But now I'm seeing it as almost part of dinner. And sometimes the guests don't even get up from their chairs to watch this big cake cutting happen. It's more of a thing in the corner with the photographer and the planner and all the logistics of where you stand and where you slice and smile and all of that. But it's not as big of a involved micro event as it used to be. Do you feel like that?
Yeah, I've done it like that before. I think it's really nice. I think it's really nice, especially if, again, depending on the venue, it's really great if you can see the dance floor from the dinner tables. Like if that dance floor is right in the middle of that room, it's pretty awesome because you do the cake cutting, right? And then you go into the first dance. Like you can go into the first dance and people can watch the first dance as people are eating their cake and drinking mm-hmm. their coffee. So it works really, really nicely. Now, if let's use the example of, for example, foreign cinema, right? Like the cake is typically in the gallery and that's where dancing happens and dinner is in a totally separate area. You can put the cake, of course, in the dinner area. However, then that means, let me go back on that because you could also logistically say, let's cut the cake here so everybody can see it, right? And then the bride and groom will say, hey, everybody, join us in the gallery. We're going to have first dance, or the DJ can say this. And by the way, cake will be served in the gallery. Mm-hmm. And then you could move people in there and do it that way too. It just, you know, it's all different ways of doing it. Another thing, you know, which is kind of the more traditional way, is to have cake cutting later on in the evening after people's dinner, you know, after people have been dancing and their dinner has gone down a little bit and they're maybe ready for a little bit of sweets. Mm-hmm. But when you're at a restaurant, you like to have your dessert right after dinner.
Yeah. And when you're up, you're up. And that there is definitely a benefit of shifting people's attention directly from, oh, look at them, they're so cute, they're cutting the cake, move 7 feet that way. Oh, look at them, they're doing their first dance, that's so awesome. Yeah. And then that can go straight into the father-daughter dance, potentially blend into the mother-son dance. And then, you know, often I see the DJ then after those three special micro events are kind of back to back and they've kept everybody's butts in their chairs, but they've also kept attention on the stars of the show, the bride and groom or the groom and groom, bride and bride, whoever, doing these special things that are documented by the photographer and the videographer and everyone's in there. Then it's a everybody out on the dance floor. And for the big sort of big get them all out there first mm-hmm. dance. And that could yeah. also be a song that you've decided on ahead of time as well.
Oh, yeah. And then just to that end, you mentioned photographer, Christy. If you are on a tight budget and you only have a certain amount of hours for your photographer and or videographer, then you're going to want to do that cake cutting quickly right after mm-hmm. dinner. You're going to want to get all these micro events boom, boom, boom done because your photographer is going to be gone by 8 o'clock at night, let's say.
Right.
And so that's another point, another, you know, logistical decision depending on your wedding, specifically depending on your budget, depending on the venue. There's all these variables involved.
Right, because if you pack all those micro events right next to each other, he or she captures all of those moments. And then the last 2 hours of your wedding, if it's, you know, a normal 6 or 7 hour deal, is just open dancing. So and you'll even have that in your timeline, open dancing for the last 2 hours until he makes an announcement about the last dance or last call and everybody packs it up and goes. So I found that when brides and grooms, when my clients want to do a big farewell with the sparklers or any sort of like run out to the Rolls Royce, it's really hard to manage the photographer's time in that way because you're asking mm-hmm. now you want him to stay till the very last second. And most packages are 6, 7 hours, 8, 9, 10, 11 hours of photography. You're definitely getting into paying more per hour than right. what their package might offer.
And if you're on a budget, you're not going to afford that. And so maybe if you do have that big send-off, great, but it's not going to be captured by the photographer. Everybody's going to have their cell phones out taking photos, right? Mm-hmm. And you might encourage that. Guys, take photos yeah. and send them to us. Hashtag, you know, Christy and Lance's big, you know, escape or whatever mm-hmm. it is.
Yeah, because you can manipulate the schedule and move things around even if it doesn't seem to make the most sense. It can almost be contrived a little bit, like the fact that you have a photographer capture you cutting one slice of cake, but then it's not an hour until guests actually put that cake in their mouth. That could be a part of your timeline, but you did it that way so that the photographer could get everything. But one thing you sort of can't manipulate is the big farewell. That'd be yeah. really weird to ask yeah. your guest to like do the farewell just for the photographer and then everybody go back inside and dance. You would lose
definitely
people on that one.
Not spontaneous or organic.
Exactly,
whatsoever.
Exactly. And some weddings are so scheduled out that I fear that they are more of a photo shoot for the client, for the people getting married, than they are an yeah. actual wedding experience to enjoy. And I have felt that more since moving here to Dallas than I had before. There's a big sort of status that comes with getting your wedding published or getting some in a magazine afterwards. But in order to do that, the pressure to have your photographer capture every single moment, mm-hmm. it's all mm-hmm. in the timeline. Hand bouquet to grandma, kiss grandma on the cheek. Mm-hmm. All of it gets so, the timeline gets so packed that yeah. it feels not organic at all. And I worry sometimes as a planner whose job it is to make all these things happen that the bride and groom or the couple aren't actually enjoying all these moments that they've put in there because it's more of a concern about whether or not it's getting documented the right way.
Right.
So do remember as you're making this timeline that the biggest point of a timeline is for you to get it all out and get the information to who needs it. And then ideally, if you are the person getting married, you forget about a timeline.
Yeah, don't have it in your hands.
Don't have it printed out. Don't have it on your phone. Your vendors and your friends, if that's how you're choosing to have your wedding and maybe don't have a planner, your vendors are the ones who have all the information they need. They have the details, and they should be able to guide the day the way that you want it to go.
Yeah, if you don't have a month of coordinator at the least who's doing this for you, maybe you have it printed and you give it to your best friend, whether that be maid of honor, best man, or best friend, if this is, you know, you're not using those terms. But don't have it in your hand. And, you know, your catering, your banquet captain, whoever is running catering will most likely take the ball and roll with it with this schedule. So we talked about micro events being toasts, cake cutting, whether it's right after dinner or later in the evening. We talked about first dance, right? That's another one. If you are having a cultural wedding, you may have, we talked about this before, if it's a Jewish wedding, you have the Hora dance, you know. Oh, actually, Christy, I have a client who listens to our show. She loves our show, Stephanie Lamb. Hey, girl. She had emailed. She's being really great about emailing questions, by the way. We love her. She had asked about in a receipt. Is it a receipt? Hold on. Wait. Yeah. So Stephanie asked about a receiving line, which in a lot of cultures, this happens, right? And it used to happen way, way back in the day. But like in my culture, in the Hispanic culture, a lot of times you have this. You have the couple getting married, their wedding party lined up, and the parents, right? You have this receiving line, which typically happens after the ceremony at the reception location.
When people are maybe entering the reception ballroom?
Exactly.
Okay, that's what
exactly. And so this can be, and if it's something that's important to you and you want to do this, definitely build it into your timeline, because depending on how many guests you have, this could take quite a while. Have you done this before, Christy?
You know what? Not a single wedding I've done had a receiving line.
Yeah.
The alternate is that during dinner, you schedule in a little pad of time so that the bride and groom or bride and bride, the couple, feel like they, after they eat very fast, can go up to each table.
Yes.
To say hello and shake hands and hug and take some pictures. The photographer often follows them around during that time. But
yes,
that has been the choice instead of a receiving line. Yes. In my experience.
Yeah. So that's a great tip. If you are worried about doing a receiving line, but you know, it's really important to mom or dad or whomever, or you, that you have some sort of personal contact with each guest, that is a good option during dinner, right? To walk around and chat with people, but just make sure you eat. You've got to eat.
And I would say that receiving line or talking to guests, table visits, as I call them in the timeline, that definitely counts as a micro event. You definitely include that and block out the amount of time that you estimate that will take.
Yeah.
I would say no less than 15 minutes for an actual receiving line.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the money dance. It's going to go over what you allot, because you can't turn people down. I mean, you can't say like, oh, that's it. Last guest.
Right.
That's it. No one else gets a hug.
So a receiving line, again, if you've got 300 guests at your wedding, and oftentimes in our culture, in the Latin culture, you do have that many guests and you do want a receiving line, it's going to take a while and your guests are going to be waiting. Now, if they're used to doing this at weddings, they're going to be like, cool. Definitely if you're doing a receiving line, build at least, like Christy said, 15, 20 minutes, depending on how many guests you have, and make sure you're moving it along. Make sure, that you're just giving a kiss and a hug. Thank you. And then like, there's another person at the end of the line, move it along. Like I would definitely, not make the couple at the beginning of the line, because they're going to spend the most time, you know what I mean? Like they're moving it along. So, and then as an alternative, it could be walking around during dinner. Now, you mentioned money dance. That's another one that's usually cultural.
Mm-hmm. That's on the list of, like, we've talked toasts, we've talked just kind of other events, and then dances. Boom, boom, boom. Lots of dances can happen that the DJ will likely need to announce and facilitate. And the money dance, garter toss, bouquet toss, anniversary dance, which I don't see that a lot, but I think it's pretty fun.
Anniversary dance. Oh, the oldest couple.
Yes, everybody's married, out there.
Longest married, like, couple.
Yeah.
Yeah,
if you've been married
cute.
For 2 years, get off the floor. And, you know, those kind of things, it's cultural, like you mentioned. It's also very based on per family.
Right.
Like, in our family, we always dance to certain songs that it doesn't matter who's getting married. If you're related to a daily, we are family. That
oh,
is
no,
playing, and it is going nice. To be a hit.
Right.
It doesn't matter if you're 21 or if you're 51 in our family and you're getting married. That happens. So
yeah.
That's another one of those, you know, dances that needs to have a little bit of thought put into it, because you just need to be prepared for it. And the DJ needs to have all of these songs ahead of time so that they're all lined up and on his computer or equipment, and he's ready to go with all the songs. So with each dance as a micro event in your timeline, it needs to have a coordinating song next to it.
And just a side note, if you're working with a professional DJ, they're going to help you with this. They're going to plan this out with you. And they're probably going to have their own template for this, which is fine. Just make sure you drop it into your master wedding day schedule and make sure the DJ has your master schedule in his or her hands as well on the wedding day.
Yes.
Another one would be dancing with your parents, right? Traditionally called father-daughter, mother-son dance, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if all parents are still living and with us, that's lovely, and you plan that. A lot of times, you know, you'll split it. You know, the father and the daughter will start, and then halfway through the song, the groom and his mother would go out onto the dance floor, right?
Yes.
Depending
so it's
on
so one song, maybe a minute and a half in, it's joined by the other couple, the other parent and partner.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes it's one song, sometimes it's two. Sometimes I've had, you know, a mother demand that she has an entire song with her son, which is, you know, fine. If that's what you want to do, go for it. Again, just remember, once you time all this out, look at your contract with your venue and make sure that this all works. And then sometimes another micro event, again, this is really traditional, if you're having a traditional wedding, is bouquet and garter toss.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm not seeing that much of anymore, to be honest.
I am not seeing it much either. And when I do see it, surprises me who is choosing to do it.
Yeah.
Like I will expect a younger couple, or I don't know. But then someone will come out of the blue and be like, oh yeah, we're doing that. And I'm like, huh, I did not expect you to say that, Dr. Wong. But okay, let's do it. Let's get all your doctor friends out there.
Yeah.
So it's up to you. And that's what the fun part with this timeline, this part of the timeline process is, because all of these things are special songs and special dances that mean something to you.
Yeah.
And that are going there. You're adding the color to this painting now. This is the creative and fun part where people are going to be like, I can't believe she walked. They introduced the bridal party, wedding party to that song. That was so cool. Or that was so Michelle, mm-hmm. how she did that. And I've never seen that before. So this is the time to think about weddings that you've been to, that they did things you really liked. And maybe think about weddings that, you know, you were like, I did not like, as a guest, I did not like doing that.
Yeah.
That made me uncomfortable. I don't want to do that at our wedding. So this is the time for you and your partner to lay around and talk about, you know, what you envision. And then just, boom, plug it into the timeline and your wish is our command.
Definitely. Any other micro events? I think we covered all of them.
Well, we have. I what I just mentioned it, but the big announcement into the room.
Sometimes
just the wedding party is introduced. Sometimes the parents, as well, anybody that was involved in the ceremony, or sometimes just the bride and groom or the couple are, for the first time as Mr. and Mr., you know, welcome in. They might choose to do that. And then, again, like all of these, that is also one micro event that I often see just ditched from the timeline altogether.
Yeah. A lot of times that happens, you know, as guests, if guests get seated for dinner, they're all seated. Champagne is being poured and they're not, the couple is introduced into the room. That's a nice touch. And that's definitely something you want scheduled if you're going to have that.
Yeah. Yes. And it has to be scheduled out sort of physically too, because it's where you are going to enter.
Yeah.
And then do you come out onto the dance floor and wave to everyone? Do you go straight to your seat?
Mm-hmm.
Your wedding party needs to know their point A to point B if you're all entering together. And I think that's also a really fun time of the night as well.
And don't forget in that, if you don't have a wedding coordinator, you're going to need somebody who is going to be at the door to open and close the doors for you and be having a visual with whomever is announcing so that you guys cue it up on time. So
you're
that
not
would
standing
also be
in the hallway like, wow, this is taking a while. What should we do?
When do I open the door?
And inside everyone's like, just staring at the door waiting for you to burst in.
Yeah.
Yeah, wedding planners, man. Super helpful.
Yeah, right?
They are. I also wrote down Last Dance. A lot of times this is a song by Journey. And I love that. It was the last dance of one of my, it was a song at my wedding. And here, and I don't know if you're seeing this too, more couples are choosing to do this private last dance instead of maybe a sparkler farewell. All of the guests leave the room and the bride and groom have one last dance on the dance floor with just the DJ and the photographer in there as kind of a private, sweet way to take in the last bit of the day. I'm kind of digging it. I haven't done a ton of weddings that do that, but I know.
So wait, where are the guests when this is happening?
Everyone's like left and they're getting into the shuttle buses. Or if you are doing a big farewell, they're lining up outside and lighting their sparklers and creating the alley that you're going to run out of. But it's scheduled in the timeline as a private last dance. And it's in an empty ballroom, basically. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Let me know if you see that happening out there on the West Coast.
I'm just used to Donna Summer, Last Dance.
Yeah. Totally.
And it starts out all calm and quiet, and then it just like freaking blows up, and people love it.
I love wedding dancing. As we get older, it really seems like the only time we can dance in a crowd of people is at a wedding. When else? I don't go out to the clubs anymore.
I did. I went to the Castro last weekend and danced.
Good for you.
At Toad Hollow. It was
good for you.
Anyway. All right. Anything else, lady?
No. I did write down just random surprise things that might be in the timeline as a micro event.
Mm-hmm.
If your wedding party is doing a flash mob dance, or if the groom really wants to sing back that ass up or whatever. You just have to put all that in. I don't know.
Or if there's a groom's cake.
That's right. That usually goes right after wedding cake cutting. But sometimes people want to unveil the groom's cake. So they roll it out onto the dance floor. And then also any dances that you definitely want the DJ to play, like the wobble or the hustle or anything like that. It doesn't necessarily have to be something that you time out, but it is on the list of information you need to give the DJ.
Yep. Yep, yep.
So, yeah. So part three, which will be our next episode about the timeline, will be taking part one and part two and putting them together and finishing up your timeline. More about logistics and arrival times. And
vendor arrivals.
Yeah, set up.
Yeah, set up. All the behind-the-scenes stuff that you probably don't know much about, and you're going to be learning about it on part three of this three-part timeline
Because it's not something you can do at the beginning of wedding planning. You have to have the contracts and make sure that you're plugging in all of their contracted timing into your timeline. So it is it's a fourth quarter
confirmation calls, you know, changes in contracts, changes in timing and hourly. Yeah, lots of fun stuff there. That always, you know, vendor arrivals get plugged in 2 weeks, 1 week before, up until day before, there's tweaks and changes. So we'll get into all that next time on part three. Can't wait. I'm so excited.
Yeah, three-part series.
Twitter handle, please.
At TBWP Podcast, thebigweddingplanningpodcast.com is our website, and our Gmail address, right?
Is thebigweddingplanningpodcast@gmail.com. We always say it. I'll never stop. Get in contact with us. Send us a tweet. Send us an email. Let us know if there's any information that you would like us to talk about on the show. We want to answer your questions. And please, you know, get the word out. Share the show with a friend. Rate and review on iTunes. And we just love you guys. Thank you so much for listening and all the support.
And we will be back soon. Bye.